Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Thanks to Bridget Bergen for filling in yesterday while I was off for Rosh Hashanah. And Happy New Year. Shana Tova to all our Jewish listeners celebrating the beginning of the year 5783, as the Hebrew calendar has it. 5783. So we could pretend it's the 80s again, right? By the standards of today, would feel like a gentler time. But here we are in election season 2022 by the Julian calendar, the one we use primarily in the world today. And by that calendar or any other, election day in the United States is 6 weeks from today. So right now on the show, we officially launch our midterm election season series, 30 issues in 30 days. That's all the weekdays between now and Friday, November 4th, the Friday before Election Day. We'll have a 30 issues issue on every edition of this show between now and then. And not to drown you in any more calendar math, but for the record, it's actually 30 issues in 29 days this year. That's because I was off for the holiday yesterday, so we held the launch back until today. We will do two today to catch right up, but that's just bookkeeping. 30 issues in 30 days starts right now. One program note about this series before we dive into issue number one. Some of you will remember the series of call-ins we did for different age groups, different generations this summer, asking what your biggest midterm elections issue is this year. And the number one issue across all age groups, wait for it, think about it, make a prediction. The number one issue across all age groups, from our callers in your teens on day one to our caller who had just turned 100 at the end of that week, the consensus number one issue was democracy in peril. So as a pro-democracy public radio show, we hear you, and we will devote a full third of our 30 issues this year to democracy in peril. That's 10 out of the 30 issues. We'll do those 10 coming up in a few weeks. But also high on your agenda was the issue of abortion rights. So we launched the series now with our first three issues being on abortion rights in this fall's election campaigns, beginning with a kind of red state, blue state comparison. Abortion rights as an issue in the New York State governor's race, and later this hour, the abortion rights referendum on the ballot in Kentucky. What will people decide in a pretty red state with a pretty tough trigger law, now that they have direct democracy there to do it with a referendum, and how is that campaign being fought? So 30 issues in 30 days, one and two this hour. Issue number one, abortion as an issue in the New York State governor's race. As Attorney General Letitia James reminded the public in a press release after Roe versus Wade was overturned this summer, New York guarantees the unqualified right to abortion up to 24 weeks post-fertilization. Abortion is permitted after 24 weeks if the fetus is not viable or if the pregnant person's life or health, including mental health, is at risk. And in New York, minors may responsibly access abortion or other reproductive health services, the Attorney General says, without parental notification or consent. In addition to that, after the Supreme Court ruling in June, New York State has now allocated $35 million to help abortion providers in the state handle the extra patients coming in from other states that have just restricted access more than before. Here is Governor Kathy Hochul on CNN in June touting the state's pro-choice history.
We had abortion legal in our state since 1970, so this is deeply personal to all of us. As the keepers of the flame, you know, we support this right. We cherish this right. And we feel for our sisters across this country who will no longer have access to control over their own bodies.
Governor Hochul, who, of course, is running for election to a full term. And by contrast, Republican candidate Lee Zeldin was caught on tape by Spectrum News at a campaign event in the spring with anti-abortion activists, promising to be the first governor in a long time to be on their side.
It's been many, many, many decades. I don't even remember the last time New York State had a pro-life governor. It's been a very long time. We're talking about generations past.
And he promised at least one high-level state commissioner appointment would go to an opponent of abortion rights.
Go out and make sure we're getting the most qualified person to be the health commissioner who is also pro-life.
So that was Lee Zeldin before the Supreme Court ruled and the backlash to it began. Now he's trying to distance himself from those remarks. Here is Zeldin speaking just last week.
I'm not in this race because of abortion. I'm not standing here today proposing to roll back that law. I am not planning to roll back that law.
We'll play more clips of Zeldin and Hochul as we go. With us now as our first guest on 30 Issues in 30 Days this year, and to explain the place of abortion rights as an issue in the governor's race is the New York State Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief, Karen DeWitt. Hi, Karen. Always great to have you on. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I'm super excited to be the first guest launching this really important series.
Thank you. Can we start with what the law currently is in New York State before we even get to the candidates? I mentioned the state attorney general's press release reminding everyone there is an unqualified right to abortion in New York until 24 weeks after fertilization. And that may have surprised some listeners because it's not an unqualified right all the way through pregnancy in this blue state. Why is it 24 weeks? And when was that law passed?
Right. It was passed in 2019 by the New York State Legislature when Democrats finally took over the state Senate. The Assembly had been Democratic for many years. Essentially, what they did is they codified the abortion rights in the Roe v. Wade decision into law, saying, hey, you know, there might be a day when Roe v. Wade is overturned, you know, just in case that happens. And of course, it did in June of this year. They are also trying to do little tweaks, as you mentioned, to strengthen abortion rights, providing money for women from states where abortion is banned to come here to New York and get an abortion if that's, you know, something that's appropriate for them. Also, we should mention, this isn't a law yet, but they did do first passage of a constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right of a pregnant person to choose abortion in New York State, and that, of course, is in reaction to the Dobbs decision and to, you know, rumblings among Republicans on the federal level to now perhaps, you know, pass legislation to outlaw abortion.
Yeah, and 24 weeks, as you mentioned, is basically the standard that existed under Roe, the so-called viability of the fetus to live outside the womb on its own, roughly 24 weeks. So the state legislature codified it as 24 weeks. And after that, abortion is still legally available if the life or health, including mental health, of the mother is at risk, says the New York State law. So does that make it, in effect, legal throughout pregnancy?
Yeah, you know, I think that it does. And I would also say I think that's where most New Yorkers stand on the issue. There was a recent Siena poll that found, you know, most New Yorkers, including half of Republicans, support abortion rights, but they don't want it completely unlimited. They seem to want reasonable restrictions, and I guess the consensus with that is that's a reasonable restriction. After viability, you have to really have, you know, a reason for wanting to terminate the pregnancy.
And I imagine no or hardly no pregnant person is ever told, no, this would be illegal for you under state law. I imagine anyone seeking a late-term abortion is doing so at least for their basic mental health and can get a doctor to certify that.
Right. Well, of course, because of HIPAA laws, we don't really know all those details. But, you know, anecdotally, that's you know, what people say. And the people who have come forward for having late-term abortions have, you know, talked about what the specific, you know, reasons were that their life was in danger or, you know, the fetus was just not going to be able to live once it was born.
So that's the law, and Hochul supports it. What do you make of the Lee Zeldin clips we played from before and after the Supreme Court ruled? How much of a flip-flop or revisionism on his own position are we seeing?
Well, it's interesting, and those clips came from the business council meeting last week, where Zeldin did give the time to reporters to really talk about this issue, and I appreciate that he did that. But, you know, like it or not, Zeldin says he's not running because of abortion, and I'm sure that he wasn't. But like it or not, that's becoming a big issue in the 2022 governor's race. And Governor Hochul is really using it to define Zeldin, saying his positions on abortion are too extreme, he shouldn't be elected, and she has the campaign money to make that stick. I mean, surely many of our listeners who watch TV and TV news have seen those ubiquitous ads on every TV news program, and that really helps her with voters who, you know, as we just discussed, want abortion kept legal, but they don't want it to be completely unrestricted. So highlighting that, you know, he's voted on bills that, you know, would prohibit abortion even in the cases of rape, incest, or the life of the mother is a way to define him in a way that they're hoping that, you know, voters will not vote for him, even if they might have some concerns about rising crime rates or the economy, which are two of Zeldin's issues that he's trying to highlight.
Yeah, and we'll play a clip of an excerpt, let's say, from one of those, from that Hochul ad on Zeldin and abortion that you refer to. But to be clear, the statement that he made or the news conference that he did with reporters at the Business Council meeting last week, that's where the third of the three clips that we played came from, where he said he's not running to change the abortion laws. But we did have those two clips from before Roe where he said, oh, I would be the first pro-life governor in a long, long time, and that he would appoint a pro-life health commissioner when he was speaking to an anti-abortion rights group. So when he promised in that clip to appoint a pro-life health commissioner, what could that mean? What powers over abortion rights or abortion access would a health commissioner who opposes abortion rights or pro-life, as he put it, have?
It could mean a lot, because everything in New York state law is about the regulations. The health department carries out anything health-related procedures like abortion. In fact, I just reported on a story this week about the nursing home minimum staffing standards, and it's all the story was all about the health department and how they have the power to interpret a law that the legislature passed, and the argument was it wasn't in the spirit of the law. But yes, they could pull back on, you know, the money that Governor Hochul provided, the $35 million to strengthen, you know, rights and access to abortion. There's all kinds of ways that they could really tie that up if they wanted to. And yeah, it's interesting about Zeldin saying that to his supporters about the pro-life health commissioner, because he didn't deny it on Friday, but definitely I think he wishes that he could walk that back. At the same time, he needs those voters, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he needs right-leaning and Republican mm-hmm. voters. So he's really kind of in a tough position. And, you know, in the past, a lot of Republicans have run and won, at least certainly in the state legislature, on anti-abortion. They held anti-abortion views, but they weren't highlighted in their campaign because they would always say, well, Roe v. Wade, it's settled law, it'll never be overturned, there's nothing to discuss. And I think Zeldin probably wishes he could turn back the clock and just have that issue under the radar screen. But, you know, as we're seeing, it's not happening. People care about it, and it's definitely a big issue in this campaign.
So in the news conference last week, did he walk back the promise to appoint a pro-life health commissioner? Did he say, no, I won't really appoint a pro-life health commissioner, I changed on that, or I'll appoint a health commissioner who's only a little pro-life, like a little bit pregnant? How did he tweak it, if at all?
Yeah, he didn't walk that back. He was asked, would you issue any executive orders that would restrict abortion? And he didn't really answer that, despite repeated tries from my colleague with the New York Post, Zach Williams, trying to pin him down. He just kept wiggling away from it. But he did say he'd listen to the will of the people and on using taxpayer money to fund out-of-state abortions. He said, well, you know, New York is not a dark red state, and if he seemed to indicate if people want that, then, you know, I won't, you know, dispute it or try to change those rules. But, yeah, there's a lot of questions, as you're saying, and I think that that's what's, you know, concerning some people right now.
Listeners, we welcome your calls on our 30 Issues in 30 Days issue number one, abortion rights as an issue in the New York State governor's race. What would you like to see New York State abortion law or abortion policy be? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you have thoughts or questions about the Zeldin or Hochul positions on the issue? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer for Karen DeWitt, the Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio. Karen, just let me focus in on what you were just saying for a minute, and then we're going to turn more in depth to the new additional protections the state has enacted since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision in June and Hochul's and Zeldin's position on those. But you reported on the radio that when pressed, Zeldin would not rule out any executive action restricting abortion access. He wouldn't rule out making any executive decision unilaterally that restricts abortion access, even though he said he's not running on it. So how did he leave that door open?
Yeah, I mean, he just didn't completely answer the question. When I listen, you know, it seemed like he was, but when I listened back to exactly what he said, he didn't completely rule that out. He didn't make a pledge, no, I won't do that. And that's, I guess, as reporters, we're always trying to get politicians to define themselves pretty exactly and make pledges, and he did not do that. And, you know, that leaves open the question and puts him in a vulnerable position on this issue because, you know, as we discussed, he needs Republican voters. He needs his base if he wants to go forward, but he also needs to get some Democrats and some independent voters. And, you know, that's going to be tough to do if he can't, you know, define himself, you know, completely on this issue.
All right. In a minute, we'll turn to the new additional protections the state has enacted since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision to help women coming from other states to New York because of the decision. We'll take your phone calls. We'll see where Hochul and Zeldin stand on these new things and how much money the taxpayers are going to donate to it. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series for this midterm election season. Just starting out, issue number one, abortion rights as an issue in the New York State governor's race with Karen DeWitt, Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio Stations. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And Michael in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
Thank you for covering this issue. It's very important. And I'm an odd call because I'm a male and I'm well above my reproducing years, but about 4 or 5 years ago, I would have probably thought, like many listeners, that New York is such a blue state, even if the governor or the health commissioner is pro-life, it's not really going to change things. And about 3 years ago, my daughter got cancer, and without going into the long story, when a young woman is in her reproducing years, the chemo can do damage to her reproductive system. Mm-hmm. And I'll fast forward to the end and say it's a happy story. My daughter is healthy, and she's in college, and she's doing well.
Okay.
But so that's great. But in the interim, she had to go in for IVF. And to fast forward through more medical and health insurance stuff than you would ever want to hear on the air, the fact that New York State had a pro-choice governor, and especially the fact that Andrew Cuomo had a number two named Melissa DeRosa, who was very active in women's rights and reproductive rights, meant that our health insurer ended up having to cover not all, but a lot of the IVF that had to be done. Again, not choice. This isn't a person who's doing IVF because she is late in her years and trying to get pregnant. It's a person who's trying to preserve her reproductive system as a result of getting cancer. So we went through that. It was still a ton of work, but the benefit of having pro-choice infrastructure was very clear. And the reason I'm calling in, even though, again, I'm not necessarily the demographic expected for your first call, but the reason I'm calling in is just to say that there are a lot of arcane state laws that are absolutely the domain of the health commissioner and the governor and whoever they put into place, and they affect a lot of people in their reproductive health, their reproductive rights, and their general health care, which is, I think, why so many New Yorkers are pro-choice.
Well, what a fabulous call, and so specifically to the point, no matter what age you are, and I'm glad your daughter's okay. So, Michael, thank you very much for being our first caller in 30 issues in 30 days this year. And Karen, that was very interesting, a really interesting example of how the executive branch, even without the legislature, which we imagine would not overturn any abortion rights in New York State right now, has powers. And I guess in this case, it had to do with how private insurers need to cover certain reproductive kinds of health care.
Right. Yeah, Michael made the point way much better than I could, because there are so many of those nuances. I mean, it's true. Then you have issues of contraception and access and of health insurance pay in addition to the in vitro fertilization. You know, the thing about abortion is, to some people, it can seem like kind of, or other reproductive choices, it can seem like a black and white issue until it happens to you or a member of your family. And then you see, you know, everybody has a story. It's very nuanced about decisions they make and, you know, how that plays out and what kind of access that they have.
Let's turn to the new additional protections the state has enacted since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision in June, reversing Roe versus Wade. Here again is Governor Hochul on CNN shortly after that decision.
Here in New York, we took action already. We've given $35 million to our existing providers so they can beef up and prepare for the influx of women coming from other states. We also, I signed a package of laws just last week, made sure they have immunity for our abortion providers in this state so they're not subjected to lawsuits from states where they have personal rights of action to go after people who secure an abortion or the provider. So we've done what we can here to become a safe harbor for women across this country. But to us personally, this is devastating. This is a blow to all women. But my view is you stand up and you fight back.
So, Karen, can you tell us in a little more detail what's new in the state since the Supreme Court ruling? Like, what's that $35 million the governor referred to for?
I have to say, Brian, as the governor was talking and I was reviewing this, I was thinking, that is a good question. You know, I haven't seen any follow-up to the enactment of these laws. And talk about the health department and regulations. A lot of this is for the health department to carry out. I am curious about how many women have come from other states seeking, you know, reproductive care here, and how that money is being used at abortion provider clinics. I mean, that was announced. Hochul got a lot of credit for it. I'm not really sure how that's playing out, though, in real time. But certainly, providers, I don't think, have to be afraid in New York to provide services to women from other states, because it gets into the nitty-gritty of, you know, you can't be sued for medical malpractice, there can't be extradition, you know, authorities from another state can't, you know, make you go to that state and face charges that you performed an abortion on someone, you know, in your state when it's illegal in their state. So all those kinds of things, it seems like they looked at all of those kind of, you know, criminal provisions and were able to try to provide the protections for providers. But as to how many providers are performing, you know, reproductive rights services for people from other states? I don't know the answer to that. I'd really like to know the answer to that.
So listeners, maybe there's somebody out there right now who can help us report that part of the story. Is anybody working in the healthcare field involved with providing abortion services who has seen an influx of patients, or even one patient whose story you could tell from a state with a trigger law that took effect after Roe is reversed, or any sort of new out-of-state people seeking reproductive health care since the Supreme Court's decision, if you work in the field, or maybe you as an individual are one of those people, or maybe you helped one of those people come to New York in any way to access abortion services that they could not now suddenly get in whatever their home state is. Anybody with a story like that to tell? And if anything from the New York State funding, if you can even go to that level of detail, seems to have helped them pay for it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And Karen, on one part of that law that you referred to, I guess it's possible that we're going to see some kind of federal court battle between a state like Texas, let's say, that wants to criminally charge a New York State doctor for performing an abortion on a Texas resident who comes here, because Texas would say it's illegal for that person to have an abortion. Therefore, it's illegal for the New York doctor to have provided the abortion, and they're going to try to charge the New York doctor. So New York now has this law protecting those New York medical providers, but I don't know. This may wind up in federal court to decide which state has jurisdiction.
That's right. It's a good point. State law, not federal law. Well, maybe, you know, they'll side with state rights, but who knows? But yeah, so far we don't know of a case, excuse me, like that. But that is perfectly possible that could happen, and you know, probably in some of these states where you have, you know, the governors of Texas and Florida, who think they might be able to, you know, further their political career by doing that, they probably are looking for an example.
And here again is Zeldin from last week, trying to soften his previous positions opposing abortion rights, commenting on the taxpayers of New York helping to fund abortions for pregnant patients coming from states that have bans. Listen.
In some other darker red state, there might be a very different perspective on whether or not taxpayers should have to pay for people to come into the state for an abortion from another state versus what the will of the people may be in a blue state like New York.
So what is he saying there, Karen, about his own position and political reality? And how much of a tweak, let's say, is that from what he might have said 6 months ago before the Dobbs decision?
Yeah, it seems like he's saying he isn't going to mess with those laws that we just discussed, that Hochul and the legislature passed, and that, you know, he would do what people want instead of something that, you know, maybe the more right-wing people might want to do. But yet again, he isn't promising that. So it's, you know, I guess that's what voters have to decide. Do you believe him, what he's saying on this, if this is an important issue to you? And do you think, well, it'll probably basically be okay? He's saying that he's not going to, you know, alter New York's abortion laws or, you know, mess too much with what the health department's doing, carrying them out. Or, you know, are you going to believe Governor Hochul, who says he's just so extreme that he just should not be in office at all?
We have a tweet from a listener who says, I am raising money for the New York Abortion Access Fund, and they are serving many more women than ever before since Roe fell. They serve women from other states in addition to women in New York. So that's a general statement of what one fundraiser for an abortion rights access group is doing. Here is Kate in Scarborough calling on that same topic. Kate, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I went to a presentation by Planned Parenthood Hudson Taconic, which is got 10 clinics in Westchester, Rockland, Putnam, and Suffolk County. and they've seen an increase of about 20% of their clients now come have increased and are more from out of state. They have used some state money to hire another assistant medical director. They have beefed up security because the crazy protesters in other states now know to come to New York. But the most important thing to know is they have also seen people in New York who don't have accurate information. Young women who come in with medical complications because they thought abortion was illegal. So they tried to give themselves one. So there are many issues that are involved in this cause, going from misinformation to the need for better health care. And I loved your first caller talking about, you know, if you've got reproductive parts and your loved ones have reproductive parts, then these abortion laws affect you.
Kate, thank you so much. And kind of a chilling example there from Kate in Scarborough, that's Hudson River town, talking about how some, even New York women come in and girls thinking abortion has become illegal here and not knowing what to do.
Yeah, that's really disturbing. It goes into the other topics that you're going to address later in this segment on, you know, democracy and misinformation. That's really, I'm really sorry to hear that people would think that despite like all of, you know, our best efforts to report what's actually, you know, going on in New York State.
So here's a clip you included in your recent radio story of an anti-Zeldin ad that Hochul is running. The ad calls Zeldin extreme on abortion and then says,
and has supported abortion bans so cruel toward women, they include no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, because Lee Zeldin is extreme and dangerous.
Can you fact check that claim that he supported legislation without those exceptions?
Well, yes, in July, because he is, you know, still an active congressman, the House had the Women's Health Protection Act, prohibits government interference in a woman's right to choose abortion after 24 weeks, and he voted no on that, and also the Access to Abortion Act, which prohibits anyone from, you know, acting against a woman in a state where abortion is banned to seek access in another state where it's legal. So I guess what they're talking about is, you know, just, you know, not the right after 24 weeks. So yeah, he did vote against those bills. I think, you know, he kind of had to as a Republican in the current political climate in Congress. But, you know, it's certainly being used against him.
I read that Zeldin voted for a House bill as a member of Congress that would have enacted an abortion ban nationally after 20 weeks. Does he stand by that position, arguing that anything more than 20 weeks is extreme?
You know, I just, like I said, he hasn't really answered a lot of questions on it, and mostly, you know, it's more focused on not tampering with New York's laws, but no, he hasn't, you know, really been pinned down on that. You know, we really haven't had any debates yet in this race. We may not have them. We haven't had a lot of extended interviews with the candidates. So it makes it a little difficult to, you know, really determine their exact positions on these things, unfortunately.
You want to give us, by the way, a quick Hochul-Zeldin debate update? From what I've been reading, Hochul has accepted one televised debate. Zeldin has accepted two different channels televised debates. They haven't accepted the same debates. So far, no debates.
Right. Well, you know, Zeldin's trying to use what leverage he can to get Governor Hochul to agree to more debates. And Hochul, you know, at least from the statement, seems to be only agreeing to just one debate on a Spectrum News, which is fine. You know, they have a great track record, but Zeldin's making the point that that's, you know, that's on cable, and not everybody has cable anymore, you know, and doing one, a debate that is accessible to at least over the air or more widely broadcast would make sense. So I don't know. It seems to me that Zeldin eventually, if Hochul doesn't agree to more debates, and it doesn't seem like she's going to, is going to have to agree to it. Because frankly, I think he needs a debate and needs the attention, you know, more than she does. But yeah, she's you know, she's learned a lot from being, you know, a politician for a long time. And I don't want to put this way, but I do feel like in some way she has learned from her predecessor, the controversial former governor Andrew Cuomo, who was very limited in the debates that he did as well in general elections because he didn't feel like they were going to serve him well, and he didn't want to give attention to opponents who were, you know, trailing him in the polls, as Zeldin is trailing Hochul in the polls.
Let's take one more call. This is on the topic of government funding for abortions and a national law that's in effect that might confuse some people when they hear New York is funding abortion access. So Don in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
Just a question. The Hyde Amendment prevents the federal government from giving states money to fund abortions. So how does the Hyde Amendment affect New York State being able to give money for Medicaid patients from out of state to fund the abortions?
That is a great question, Don, and I think a lot of people are confused by that because they hear Medicaid funding for abortion is banned by Congress, just as Don says, and yet, Karen, in New York State, a person on Medicaid can get a government-funded abortion, right?
Yeah, well, he's really challenging me here. Every year during the budget, the pro-life faction in the legislature will debate this issue for, you know, a couple of hours during the budget to the point where it's happened so many times we sort of tune it out. But, yeah, New York does make an exception for that. I guess they're allowed to. I would have to look up the details, but they are allowed to.
My understanding is they're allowed to by using state funds only, and Medicaid does give states a lot of leeway to do different things at the state level. Some states cover a lot more than other states cover under Medicaid. And so I think that's the answer to that question. And that's
right.
Going to be...
And again, I would just say it goes back to the health department regulations too, right? How they carry that out.
And that's 30 Issues in 30 Days, issue number one, abortion rights and the New York State governor's race. We thank New York State Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt. Great job as always, Karen. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.